This is DW News live from Berlin. Russia's daily COVID-19 death toll surges to another record high, surpassing 1,000 for the first time. It comes as the country faces a sustained wave of new infections. Doctors are raising the alarm. Also coming up on the show, Britain in shock after a lawmaker is stabbed to death. Police are treating David Amos's killing as a terrorist attack. The incident is prompting renewed questions about security for politicians. And in the Bundesliga, Dortmund have their Norwegian talisman to thank again. Erling Haaland scores twice to clinch the points against Mainz. Hello, I'm Claire Richardson. A warm welcome to the show. We begin in Russia, where the daily COVID-19 death toll has surged to another record high, topping 1,000 people for the first time. COVID-19 deaths have repeatedly hit new records over the past several weeks as infection rates continue to soar. The trend is fueled by continued vaccine hesitancy and a reluctance to toughen restrictions. Despite the government developing a vaccine, only 29% of Russia's 144 million residents are fully vaccinated. Doctors in Moscow are now sounding the alarm.
We are on the verge of a disaster. The number of hospitalizations and deaths has increased dramatically, including among doctors. Inviting retired doctors to return to work will only make things worse.
And our reporter Stacey Bivens joins me now in the studio for more. Stacey, welcome. This growing number of infections and indeed deaths doesn't seem to be convincing the skeptical to actually get the jab. What is behind that?
Yeah, it's interesting because Russia has developed 3 vaccines, including Sputnik V, which is the first approved COVID-19 vaccine. So for many people, though, it's a matter of trust. They don't trust the government, so therefore they don't trust the government statistics when it comes to COVID-19, and they don't trust what's in the vaccine itself. About half of Russian adults say that they will not get the jab. So that is very disconcerting for the government. And also, Russia has a problem with messaging. We just heard that doctor saying how dire the situation is, and the health minister is saying that the country is on the verge of a near critical situation. At the same time, though, the Kremlin is saying, yeah, the virus is dangerous, but the situation is under control and we have enough hospital beds. So when you have such a huge disparity and you have so many people with so many questions, they're not doing enough to reassure people.
So with that distrust so high, as well as the mixed messaging that you talked about, what exactly is the Kremlin doing to try to reach out to those who may be hesitant to get a vaccine?
Well, it's interesting. Spokespeople for the Kremlin are frustrated, and they say that they have done all that they can. They believe that their messaging was good, and they believe that they've made vaccinations accessible because they do have so many vaccines that are homegrown. So it's placing the blame on the population, on the unvaccinated. A spokesman says everything has been done to give the public the chance to save lives, but too many people are balking at that chance. And speaking of frustrations, a state-run news agency went down to the annexed region of Crimea to give an example of how dire the situation is. And they interviewed 2 men who said, you know, this is my fault. I was irresponsible for not getting the virus. And then they talked about how difficult the recovery process is with COVID. So they feel like the messaging, like I said, has been where it needs to be, and now it's the responsibility of the people to get the help that they need.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about vaccines. Of course, lockdowns are another tool in the toolkit for many governments around the world to try and get these numbers under control. Have we seen anything with regard to that as a possibility that the Russian government may impose?
The Kremlin is saying no, there's not going to be a nationwide lockdown. They said that it was too hard on the economy. And some politicians say that it was too hard on President Putin's reputation, and it hurted his popularity. So now they're giving that responsibility to the region. So while a lot of governments are centralizing the fight against COVID, Russia is saying, no, we're giving it to the regions, let them deal with it.
All right, our reporter Stacey Bivens, thanks so much for that update here in the studio.
You're welcome.
Well, police in Britain are calling the death of conservative MP David Amos a terrorist attack with possible links to Islamist extremism. The lawmaker was stabbed multiple times as he met with constituents. A vigil has been taking place to pay tribute to Amos in the town where he was killed. Authorities say a 25-year-old suspect is in custody. The killing has devastated the constituency that Amos served for decades.
Outside the church where David Amos was killed, the pile of flowers is growing. Prime Minister Boris Johnson travelled to Lee-on-Sea on Saturday, placing a wreath along with other leading British politicians. People living here speak of Amos as a popular and respected local representative and a loving family man and friend.
Shock, utter disbelief. For a gentleman like Sir David, he's been a personal friend to me for 18 years now, since I've been in this area as a pharmacist. And he's always been here for not only myself, but for the whole constituency.
So he used to come to my daughter's school, do loads of speeches. Don't know him personally, he wouldn't know me, but he was very kind, caring. He obviously cared about the community.
Amos was speaking with people from the community when he was stabbed, doing the ordinary work of a Member of Parliament, holding a weekly meeting open to anyone. Amos chose the local church to meet his constituents, a place that should have been safe.
I can't believe it's happened. I just cannot understand why somebody has perpetrated an act of violence. I never understand that anyway, but I can't understand even more why they've perpetrated it in a place of sanctuary and a place where a person is trying to do good.
This attack has again raised questions about the lack of police protections for members of parliament once they're away from the high security around Westminster. Amos is the second MP in 5 years to be killed after Joe Cox was murdered in 2016. On Saturday, Interior Minister Preeti Patel said measures were in place to protect members of parliament.
Those measures are always under review. There is a review that's underway, has been underway in the last 24 hours. There is direct communication taking place right now. Took place yesterday as well with MPs, all 600 plus MPs, as to their whereabouts, what they're doing in their constituency to make sure that they are protected.
With counter-terrorism police leading the investigation, Patel was one of several politicians who spoke of an attack on democracy. It was a democracy that David Amos had served for almost 40 years. He leaves behind a widow and 5 children.
Well, French President Emmanuel Macron has condemned as inexcusable the brutal repression of Algerian protesters by Paris police 60 years ago. On October 17, 1961, officers carried out a deadly crackdown on a demonstration by tens of thousands of Algerian immigrants in one of the darkest episodes in post-war France. Now, some historians say more than 200 people were killed in the violence.
It's the first time a French president has attended a memorial ceremony for the Algerians killed on that night. Emmanuel Macron joined relatives of the victims in paying tribute. 60 years ago, at this spot, bodies were fished out from the Seine River. An estimated 25,000 Algerians rallied peacefully in protest against a curfew imposed on them alone. Police responded without mercy, arresting nearly 12,000 and killing dozens, throwing their bodies into the river. Many others were taken away to sorting centres and then deported. Saïd Abtou was there that night.
The police came. When they got to us, they started to massacre people, hitting them with batons on the head, then kicking them in the head with their shoes. I'd never seen anything like that.
The violence occurred in the final year of France's violent attempt to keep Algeria as one of its colonies. For decades, successive administrations ignored the massacre. President Macron's condemnation of the killings was only issued in a written statement and did not include an apology. This year's commemoration took place amid diplomatic tensions between both countries over their history.
We turn our attention now to some of the other stories making headlines at this hour. Tens of thousands have gathered for an anti-fascist rally in Rome. The demonstration came a week after right-wing extremists forced their way into the headquarters of Italy's most powerful trade union while protesting the government's coronavirus measures for workplaces. That incident led to the arrest of leaders of the neo-fascist group Forza Nuova. Thousands of demonstrators have taken to the streets of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, calling for the military to seize power. They demanded the dissolution of the transitional government of Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. The protest could further increase tensions and threaten the transition to democracy 2 years after the military overthrew autocrat Omar al-Bashir. And how did our solar system form? NASA has just launched a new mission to try and answer that question. The Lucy spacecraft lifted off from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida in the early hours of Sunday. The probe will spend the next 12 years studying asteroids near the planet Jupiter. The space rocks are leftover debris from the birth of our solar system, and researchers hope they'll reveal clues about how we got here.
Lucy is headed to Jupiter and the so-called Trojan asteroids that circle it. These celestial bodies are locked into Jupiter's orbit around the Sun by the planet's intense gravity field. The Trojan asteroids are distributed in two separate, elongated regions situated ahead of and behind Jupiter. Images from the Hubble Space Telescope show that these asteroids might originate from different places in the solar system. They have different colors and reflect light differently. The asteroids appeared about 4.5 billion years ago. They're thought to have originated in the early days of the solar system's formation. But the asteroids are still made up of their original matter, whereas the planets have continued to evolve over the years. The space probe Lucy is set to observe a total of 7 asteroids. To achieve this, it must negotiate some complex flight maneuvers. First, it will gain momentum by circling the Earth twice before it launches out into deep space. The journey will take until August 2027. Once in deep space, Lucy will be able to observe the first 4 asteroids during a flyby. Then it will set course for Earth, where it will once again gain momentum for a second journey to gather information on a different cluster of asteroids. The spacecraft is programmed to observe the surface of these different worlds, searching for ice and substances that may have led to forms of life. Scientists hope it can help them research the possible origins of matter. They're hoping this will shine new light on the early stages of our solar system.
In the Bundesliga, RB Leipzig were the first visitors to Freiburg's new stadium, and they found the hosts in typically resilient form in their new home. Leipzig had gone 1-0 up with a penalty in the first half, but Wu Yongzhong equalized in the second half to preserve his side's unbeaten record and write his name into Freiburg folklore as the first home player to score at the new stadium. Leipzig, meanwhile, remain without an away win this season. With Bayern and Leverkusen playing on Sunday, Borussia Dortmund knew that a 5th home win out of 5 could put them top of the league overnight. And they dominated visitors Mainz, helped by a goal-scoring comeback from their star striker.
Marco Rose's side was boosted by the return to the starting lineup of fit-again top scorer Erling Haaland. But it was one of the old guard who opened the scoring. Captain Marco Reus fired in an unstoppable half-volley after just 3 minutes. Haaland made his mark in the second half, winning a penalty on 54 minutes with a neat bit of skill before converting it himself, 2-0 Dortmund. The hosts were on course for a first clean sheet of the season until 5 minutes to go when they pressed that familiar self-destruct button. Jonathan Burkhardt took advantage for Mainz. Luckily, Dortmund have Haaland to paper over their defensive cracks. He benefited from good work by Jude Bellingham to clinch the points with his 9th of the season, deep into injury time. Another home win for Dortmund, And if Marco Rosa is concerned about his leaky defence, he certainly wasn't showing it at full time.
That is your news update at this hour. I'm Claire Richardson in Berlin.